Hello, this is Anil Kumar from Back to the Bible radio broadcast. We continue our current series with Dr. Neufeld to examine the Beatitudes in the greatest sermon ever preached. Please join me as we turn to Matthew chapter 5, verses 5 to 6 with this message on spiritual bankruptcy and true riches. Matthew chapter 5, verses 5 to 6. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Let's go back to the Bible with Dr. Neufeld.
I'm reading Matthew 5 verse 6. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Righteousness is that which is in complete conformity with God's will. There's something so significant here that I fear we might miss it and quickly read on. Did you notice what Jesus did not say? He did not say, blessed are the righteous. That's already been ruled out. Those who teach that Jesus in his sermon is teaching salvation by works aren't paying attention. There is no one righteous. There are only those who acknowledge their own unrighteousness, who are grieved by it, and who act in meekness in accordance to that, and those who don't do those things. It was Martin Lloyd-Jones in his studies on the Sermon on the Mount that said, "The trouble with mankind is not any one particular manifestation of sin, but rather sin itself. If you're anxious about the state of the world and the threat of possible wars, then I assure you that the most direct way of avoiding such calamities is to observe words such as these." He was referring to those who are hungering and thirsting after righteousness. Now, I hope you catch what he was saying. There's a vast difference between those people who complain about the world and those people who hunger and thirst after righteousness. Now, we've all done it, haven't we? We have perhaps sat down in a coffee shop, few friends maybe, solved all of the world's problems in one afternoon. We started with the ignorance of some of the politicians that are serving us, the rising debt problem in our nation, the problems with parliamentary democracy, and whether the police are properly accountable to an independent agency representing the people. Well, we've all wanted the world to be better. And if we're not careful, you might say, we're hungering and thirsting after righteousness. You know, and in some way, I guess we are. After all, a part of being in the image of God is to have a sense of oughtness, that some things ought to be and some things ought not to be. See, to be human is in some sense to hunger for justice and for that which is right and moral and good. But since all of the Beatitudes follow a logical progression of thought, we might assume at least four things are intended. Here they are. First, to hunger and thirst after righteousness must first be personally applied. If I have come to recognize my own spiritual poverty, have deeply mourned over it, and have become meek in the sense that I no longer make excuses for myself or defend myself, then to hunger and thirst after righteousness must mean that I hunger and thirst for it in my own life first. It means I am profoundly dissatisfied to allow sin to remain in me. As long as I see lust in me, anger, feelings of revenge, greed, selfishness, idolatry, deception, jealousy, and so much more in me, I'm going to need to cry out to God, oh, how I hunger for these things to be put to death. I long for your righteousness. See, it's of no avail whatsoever to hunger and thirst for righteousness in the world and to point it out when we so easily excuse it in ourselves. Second, to hunger and thirst after righteousness leads me ultimately to the cross and to the gospel. In Romans 1 verse 17, Paul will say that in the gospel, a righteousness from God is revealed. Now, of course, as the rest of the New Testament plays out, we learn of God's righteousness being portrayed in the cross of Jesus, a righteousness that is credited to our account. Now, Bible teachers have called this an alien righteousness, meaning that it didn't originate in me, but rather that it belongs to God, but he has graciously granted to me as I put my faith in Christ and in his gospel. So ultimately, Jesus' teaching will lead us to hunger and thirst for more of the gospel. Now third, to hunger and thirst after righteousness does mean that I care deeply about righteousness in the world around me. Christians, because we're Christians, have to care about the poor, about racism, about fairness, in which equal opportunities are given to all. We care about things like health care and bringing of relief to suffering. We hunger for an end to abortions. It's no accident that wherever the gospel has gone, hospitals and schools and matters of correcting injustice have always followed. But here I want to draw a distinction between politics and righteousness. Look, I'm not naive. I know that righteousness in society requires that there are matters that have to be put into policies and that political structures are necessary. But whereas honest Christians might disagree as to which policies are required, we cannot disagree about the final goal. We long for, indeed we hunger and thirst for the day in which the earth will be filled with the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. We long for a day when children are valued, when murder comes to an end, when injustice is overthrown, when the knowledge of Christ and His gospel simply pervades every structure. Now, I've said that when we hunger and thirst after righteousness, first, we do so in ourselves, and second, we do so in the gospel, third, we do so in culture and in society as a whole, and fourth, we do so as we long for the second coming of Jesus. Every person who hungers after righteousness will also say, "Even so, come, Lord Jesus." The Sermon on the Mount is about the announcement that the kingdom of heaven has already broken into the present era. But that's not sufficient. We long for the day when Christ returns. Indeed, because we hunger and thirst for this, it means we simply cannot be satisfied with whatever righteous advances are made in this present era. I want to see Christ. I want the heavens to part and the Son of Man to be revealed. I want Him as the ruler of the earth. Now, I'm quite sure that all four of these things are intended in this longing for righteousness. But something needs to be added. Jesus said, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst." Now, I'm afraid that the idea of hungering and thirsting are largely lost on North Americans. When my father and mother were alive, they told me about the years of starvation they had endured when they lived in the Ukraine. Those of you who know your history will know that Joseph Stalin had enacted a policy of deliberately starving the Ukraine for political reasons. And so my parents and my grandparents, living in a land of rich farmland which promised a yearly bumper crop, were forbidden to the point of death from eating from the abundance of the land that God had blessed. My father's own brother died of malnutrition. My mother told me that when they fled to Russia and to the West, she remembers the feeling of walking and her hunger-swollen legs were rubbing against one another. See, when you hunger for food, whether you wake or sleep, your mind is engaged in the thought of food. You ache with longing just to eat. All other interests are crowded out. That's your only desire. You know, I can only imagine the crushing weight that was on my grandparents as they looked at their young children's hungry eyes and knew they could not meet their need. You know, and as I grew up and as we ate meals together as a family, it was not a few times when my parents recounted the hunger years and the gratefulness that they would feel at the abundance they had right now. They told me they had dreamt about what God had now given them. And when Jesus spoke of hungering and thirsting, He meant it in just that kind of a way. Righteousness is not just something we add on to the other interests that we have in life. Everything is reduced to this one thing. All other interests in life, all other pursuits are eclipsed against a desire that simply occupies us. We long for the kingdom to come. We long for Christ to be revealed. We long for the evil in this world to finally and ultimately be done away with. And we ache like a starving man or a woman for the sin in our own lives to be put to death so that we with our whole body will live and breathe and exist to the glory of the God who has loved us. Jesus said of those who hunger and thirst after righteousness that the longing in our souls that consumes us and causes us to ache will not have been in vain. Like my parents who would stare in awe at the table before them overflowing with rich food in this country, so too we will be satisfied. The day will surely come when the earth will be filled with the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. See, when I reflect on the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, I'm struck by how different the citizens of the kingdom of heaven are to those whose hope is wrapped up in the kingdoms of this earth. To those whose hope is now, there is a kind of joy. Because they aren't filled with grief over their own spiritual bankruptcy, they never feel the kind of hunger that the citizens of the kingdom experience. But for those who are so aware of their spiritual poverty that it has made them meek, and one day the situation will be reversed. The kingdoms of this earth will collapse, and the kingdom of heaven will be established. And then the longing in our soul will be fulfilled. That is Christ's promise to us.
Today, as we examine Jesus' words on what it means to be blessed, it is a chance to look inside ourselves and ask, am I a person that is meek, one who is humble and dependent upon God? And secondly, am I someone who hungers and thirsts after righteousness? These are difficult but important lessons for every believer to grapple with. Yet if we follow them, we will truly be among the blessed. I hope that this message has impacted you as we reflect on our status as citizens of God's kingdom. Join us again tomorrow as we will look at Matthew chapter 5, verse 7 to 9 on the topic of giving and receiving grace with Dr. Neufeld. Back to the Bible, leading people into a dynamic relationship with God. We're happy to announce Dr. John's 30-day spiritual devotional book known as Quiet Spaces. Psalm 119 verse 11 says, I have stored up your word in my heart that I might not sin against you. The Bible is an effective weapon against sin. It also brings hope and renews us by reminding us of the promises of God. Bible warns us by giving us commands and consequences, and shows us the unseen vistas of the glory of God and the life to come. Reading the Bible every day is one of the means of grace that God has provided the believer to maintain our spiritual walk. In this one-month devotional book, you will be provided wonderful thoughts of encouragement by Dr. John. To request your copy, call us at 9492-440070.